Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. Today is Tuesday, July 14th in the Gregorian calendar, and the 29th of Tammuz, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. We have some top stories from over the weekend and Monday for you. Now, let's get to the news. Things are really flipping between the United States and Iran, all while the memorandum of understanding between the two countries is on life support. The U.S. military is responding to Iran with a fresh wave of strikes in retaliation for Iranian strikes on Bahrain. Specifically, we're talking about the most recent round. American forces began a naval blockade on Iranian ports and coastal areas late Tuesday afternoon. The naval blockade took effect at 4 p.m. Eastern time, which is 11 p.m. in Israel and 11:30 p.m. in Iran. U.S. Central Command says the operation is targeting Iranian capabilities used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. The latest strikes mark the fourth consecutive night of U.S. attacks. While President Trump said the Strait of Hormuz is open to all shipping except Iran and announced what he called a full blockade limited to vessels traveling to or from Iranian ports or carrying Iranian cargo, Trump says that he has decided to replace the 20% U.S. reimbursement fee that he announced earlier on cargo shipped through the Strait with trade and investment deals from Gulf states, which he says would be massive and would bring factories, plants, and equipment into the United States. He credited the U.S. military for keeping the waterway open, saluting Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Dan Kane, and U.S. Central Command Chief Admiral Brad Cooper. Iran spent Thursday firing missiles at Jordan, Kuwait, Bahrain, and Qatar, which are all countries that host American military forces and bases. Trump said that Iranian leadership has been, quote, lying, violent, and malicious, and says it was taking the country down the path of total destruction. He declared that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Trump also claimed Iran had killed hundreds of thousands of people, including 52,000 protesters. How is this affecting Israel? Well, aside from bracing for potential new missile strikes from Iran, just like some Gulf states are currently dealing with, tens of thousands of Israeli passengers are expected to receive cancellation notices after Israel's Shin Bet, so that's Israel's internal security, extended its ban on Israeli airlines landing in Dubai until the end of October, according to a report by Channel 12's Dean Fisher. The restriction, which had been set to expire at the beginning of September, is going to continue to apply to El Al, Arkia, and Israel due to ongoing regional security tensions and concerns over a possible Iran-U.S. escalation. The measure does not affect foreign airlines like Fly Dubai or Etihad, which are expected to continue operating flights between Ben Gurion Airport in Israel and the United Arab Emirates as usual. I just want to note that when this memorandum of understanding was signed between the United States and Israel, I really had a hard time believing that this was the end. And I really had a hard time believing that U.S. President Trump really believed that an MOU was going to solve the regional issues, especially as it pertains to the future of Iran's nuclear capability, as well as Iran's ability to control the Strait of Hormuz, which they want to do and which they are trying to do via violence on ships that are passing through. So I can't say that I am surprised to be sharing this news. The rest is yet to be seen. One story that we highlighted over the weekend in our newsletter, which comes out on Sundays, is the death of U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham, who passed away at the age of 71, which is quite young in today's world. The news caught me personally by surprise just a few months ago. In December, I had the opportunity to meet him while emceeing the Jerusalem Post conference in Washington, D.C. We did the conference inside the House and the Senate. So I was quite literally hosting this whole conference in the Capitol. I met Senator Graham, shook his hand, and welcomed him to the stage. And before his interview, we had some time to go over what we were going to do for his interview. I thought that I was going to be taking the interview myself, but we ended up going with a political correspondent to the Jerusalem Post. And so before I knew that, I started communicating with him to, you know, talk to him about how the interview was going to go. He was warm, funny, sharp. He was incredibly present. He did not show any signs that he was not well or that he was not mentally with us. He was quite peppy, quite informed. He's, you know, as you may have seen in the reports, he had just been flying around the world just a day earlier. He was in Ukraine. One thing that I've learned from interviewing politicians over the years as a journalist is that the best ones are the ones who make people feel like they are the only person in the room. Senator Graham had that quality. Even from the few minutes that we spoke in preparation for his interview, I understood right away that whether people agree with him or not politically, he had this incredible person-to-person relatability where he could connect, express his thoughts clearly, he uses humor, and most importantly, he just made you, the person dealing with him, feel very important, very considered, and like the attention was on you. I felt when I was speaking to him that it was just the two of us and he was not bogged down or losing focus to other things that were going on in the room. When he took the stage, it was obvious that he had spent decades thinking deeply about Israel and about the Middle East. I went back to that live video from the conference and I wrote down some of his quotes. He said, quote, "Israel does more for us than any other country in the region in terms of national security." He also warned that, quote, "October 7th was designed to harden the hearts of Israelis," end quote. And he argued that there is no Arab force that is going to disarm Hamas, end quote. He said, that's just not going to happen. For us Israelis, we know that. We know that there's no other Arab force that is going to involve themselves and really get their hands dirty with trying to disarm Hamas. We know that. We know that even in the south of Lebanon, it's been Israel. Israel has been the only one dealing with Hezbollah. Not even the Lebanese army could handle Hezbollah. We know that. That's obvious to us, but it's not obvious to people in the United States. He also insisted that Israel was the only group that could dismantle these terrorists. He spoke very optimistically about a potential Saudi-Israel normalization deal, and he urged leaders in the room not to miss what he called a historic window of opportunity between Israel and Saudi Arabia. He talked about the leader of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, talking about how he's really changing the game for women in Saudi Arabia. He's really making grand advancements for the country and that this is a good time to try to move forward and that an Israel-Saudi Arabia alliance would really be the game changer of the region, but that Saudi Arabia is just simply not going to do it if there is no some sort of resolution for Palestinians, because it's just going to be too unpopular for Saudi Arabia to go ahead and pen a deal with Israel without some kind of a resolution for Palestinians. He also noted, which is accurate, that support for a two-state solution in Israel is just at an all-time low. So he seemed to be very clued in on what's going on the ground in Israel as well. Graham was one of Israel's strongest allies in the United States Senate. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called him a great patriot of the United States who strengthened the U.S.-Israel alliance, while President Isaac Herzog of Israel described him as a beacon of moral clarity. And just 2 days before his death, Graham had been in Kyiv meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and continued advocating for tougher sanctions on countries supporting America's adversaries. And he definitely talked about being tough on China and not letting China have an economic stronghold on gas and oil, and noting that China is really working together with Russia, which is getting its oil from Iran. So he really touched on these greater regional issues while he was on the stage at that Jerusalem Post conference. And his passing really raises bigger questions for myself and for all people in the position of U.S.-Israel diplomacy. As lawmakers from Graham's generation are leaving the political stage or dying, who replaces them? Will the next generation of American leaders understand Israel through the same decades-long perspective of shared values, history, and strategic partnership? Support for Israel will not simply be assumed moving forward. That is clear. I just today watched a video of New Yorkers lighting an Israeli flag on fire in Tompkins Square Park during an afternoon of music. This is New York City, the place outside of Israel that has the largest number of Jews. And yet, lighting the Israel flag on fire was accepted in broad daylight at a famous downtown park in Manhattan that I've been to a million times, especially as a young person. This is a place, I'm talking about Manhattan, I'm talking about New York, that Jews and Israelis have contributed so much to, and we never thought that we'd be seeing the Israel flag, which is obviously a symbol of Judaism, being burned in New York City. So replacing figures like Senator Graham, who understands that Israel is America's strongest ally, is going to be a big challenge. We here at the Israel Daily News send our condolences to the family, friends, and South Carolina constituents who relied on Senator Graham, who passed away on Saturday, July 11th, 2026. The cause of death is reported to have been an aortic dissection coming from cardiovascular disease. There's going to be a toxicology and microscopy report coming out as well. So I think people are going to be keeping their eyes open for those reports. But in the meantime, it's understood that this was a cardiovascular issue. And certainly there are people raising questions about what's going to be next for the Israel-U.S. alliance as individuals like Senator Graham leave this arena. The Knesset's Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee approved a controversial bill that would significantly reduce the Attorney General's power. The final reading of this bill is set to take place on Sunday. If passed, this legislation would allow the government to reject current Attorney General Gali Baharov Miara's legal opinions by declaring them inconsistent with the current law. This will be a major difference from current policy, in which the Attorney General's position is binding. The bill also gives the government the ability to dismantle the Attorney General completely. Committee member Chair Simcha Rothman, who is really honestly behind all of this, claims that these measures are good and important. At Tribe Tel Aviv, which is a community organization that I operate in Tel Aviv, that brings in change makers in Israel, and we do these talks in English. We've hosted him a couple of times, and he really talks about the importance of having judiciary reform. He's behind this. Opposition member of Knesset, Gilad Kariv, says that this legislation places the government above the law. Elected officials are working to fast track the passage of the bill because they want to push it through before the Knesset term ends, which is set to happen just in a few days on July 17th. And the legislation is expected to become a law as soon as this week. The question about the balance of power of the Attorney General in Israel is a question within a larger framework of judicial reform, with left-wing Israelis saying the Knesset, Israel's government, has too much power and needs to be balanced by the judiciary. And the right-wing proponents seeking reform suggest that the judiciary are not elected officials and are appointed by what they often call an old boys club, with judges looking to maintain power and making recommendations for each other to be brought in to the judiciary, keeping things the way that they've been in the past, even if what member of Knesset and chair committee head Simcha Rothman would say does not reflect the changing dynamics of Israeli society today. The Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee approved the final readings of a bill that would freeze Haredi and Orthodox enlistment to the IDF for at least 7 months, starting on Sunday. The policy gives immunity from arrest to the tens of thousands of Orthodox men who are currently classified as draft dodgers, meaning they're not going to the army and they are ignoring their call-up notices. This immunity is valid until November 30th and also extends to young men who will get conscription orders after this law is passed. The law will also freeze existing criminal proceedings and strip the ability to fine yeshiva deans who file false study declarations. This bill is deeply controversial, and it's part of Prime Minister Netanyahu's deal with Haredi or Orthodox parties to gain their support before the Knesset dissolves. And that support is key ahead of the upcoming October 27th elections, in which Netanyahu is going to need that support so that his party is able to continue in the right-wing majority. He needs the support of the other parties in order to maintain his power seat. This piece of legislation is also moving through the Knesset at a time where the IDF claims that it needs 12,000 more recruits in light of this multi-front war that Israel is currently facing. And are you ready for this related piece of news? As a result of the passing of the bill, which is halting the arrest of Haredi draft dodgers, Haredi meaning Orthodox, Israeli Deputy Foreign Minister Sharon Haskel has resigned from her role. She was part of a small group of lawmakers in Prime Minister Netanyahu's coalition who voted against the bill, meaning she thinks that Orthodox people need to go to the army. She has been a vocal critic, meaning she has been against the legislation backed by Haredi parties in the Knesset, including the draft dodging bills and a Knesset bill that was passed on Monday to enshrine Torah study as a fundamental value in basic law, which critics argue encourages draft evasion, even as the IDF faces a severe manpower crisis. At least 10 people were reported killed in Israeli strikes across the Gaza Strip on Tuesday, according to Palestinian health officials and Hamas authorities. Among the dead were six police officers, including Jabalia Police Chief Mohammed Marwan Salem, who Israel says was the commander of Hamas's central Jabalia battalion and was killed alongside three other militants involved in planning attacks. Palestinian officials say that the strike hit a police post near tents, with people sheltering and displaced civilians taking cover and living, while the Israeli military says that it was targeting militants who were hiding in that area. Elsewhere in Gaza, there were more strikes that reportedly killed several civilians, including a 10-year-old boy in southern Gaza. The Israeli military says that it's investigating that incident. Palestinian reports also say that the IDF carried out demolitions and shelling in southern Gaza as fighting continues despite the most recent ceasefire in October. The European Union announced a new recovery initiative worth nearly $1 billion to support early reconstruction efforts in Gaza, with funding focused on debris removal and restoring essential services like water and sanitation. The aid package is backed by several European governments, the European Commission, the European Investment Bank, and the World Bank, with Australia and Canada expected to participate. EU officials say they reached an agreement with Israel to move forward on two major infrastructure projects related to waste and water management in the Gaza Strip. The European Commissioner stressed that meaningful reconstruction depends on Hamas being disarmed, saying security conditions are necessary for aid to reach civilians effectively. The donor conference in Brussels, attended by Palestinian Authority officials and representatives from the U.S., Board of Peace, also examined Palestinian Authority reforms as part of planning for Gaza's post-war recovery. Now, I always try to end our shows with something positive, so let's talk about a first for women in the IDF. For the first time ever, a woman will be promoted to the rank of Brigadier General in the Israeli Air Force. Colonel G, as they're calling her, has been commanding the Uvda Air Force Base since May 2024, becoming the first female Air Force base chief. Now, in 2019, she became the first female to command an Air Force squadron. In her up-and-coming role, she is going to serve as Strategic Air Force Attaché for Washington, where she will engage in decision-making and conversations regarding the U.S.-Israel aerial cooperation. In the Israeli military, a brigadier general is the third highest rank, while one woman had risen to the rank of brigadier general in the IDF ground forces. Colonel G is the first woman to be promoted to the rank by the Air Force. Fewer than 20 major generals serve in the IDF general staff, with the only lieutenant general being the IDF chief of staff himself, Eyal Zamir. At the same time as Colonel G's promotion, more appointments have been made in the IDF, including at the rank of brigadier general and colonel. So that's all underway. Kol hakavod. All the respect goes to you, Ms. Colonel G. I am sure that a strong female voice for Israel in Washington will be absolutely critical to success. We all know, and if you don't know, I'm about to inform you, that having more female representation in boardrooms and in governments is directly related to greater success. And in fact, countries around the world that have more women in positions of leadership have less crime in their streets. And we all know, and if you don't know, I'm telling you that women are absolutely critical to creating a better outcome for societies today. So I am very excited. We here at the Israel Daily News are very excited about this. Thank you to our writer, Perry Schwartz, for bringing this up to us and for helping us write that important story. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 27 degrees. That's 75 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 81 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in, and get on our weekly mailing. I get pretty personal in that letter from the editor at the top. You can sponsor our show by going over to the website as well. And I want to thank all of you for supporting independent journalism. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger. And I also would love to give a big shout out to our latest contributor to the Israel Daily News. Her name is Eva Winterschon, and she is our latest Israel Daily News contributor. She has joined us on Patreon, making a monthly donation to us, which we really appreciate so much. And by the way, Ms. Eva, I see that you noted that you lived in Costa Rica, and in fact, I also lived in Costa Rica before I graduated college. I studied Spanish as a major, and I did 16 credits of Spanish grammar and lived with a Spanish-speaking family, an older woman who lived in San Jose, Costa Rica. I lived with her, and that's where I really learned how to speak Spanish fluently. I spent 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for an entire semester learning Spanish in Costa Rica. So I'm just reading your email here. I see that you and I have a lot to discuss. And it looks like you're looking for some pointers in the Aliyah process. I would be happy to talk to you about that. Thank you so much for being a full-time listener of the Israel Daily News. You said that our podcast is one of your favorites and that you look forward to it when it is still dark on the Pacific coast and you are looking for your Israel news. We appreciate you. A big thank you goes out to our sponsor, again, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, and our associate producer, Lori May, as well as our interns who are still in Israel for the summer, Leah and Hannah. Alex has returned home to the United States, but he was a great news writer. Have a great and productive day to all of you listening to the Israel Daily News, and have an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.